Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th day of December, Anno Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Did you pay your dues?
One interruption.
Before the news.
Important notice. It's official. The Rumballs were made yesterday. They are aging very well in the refrigerator and will be here next Saturday.
And the crowd goes wild.
I forgot my crowd. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Hooray, hooray.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. There it is. And now the news.
That's a... We still have this in the thing.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American.
Wow. We had that while you were out.
Oh.
So folks would know. You're still around and kicking.
Still kicking. Still here. Sorry, can't get rid of me that easily.
No.
The U.S. Federal Trade Commission has become the latest organization to warn against the growing use of QR codes in scams that attempt to take control of smartphones, make fraudulent charges, or obtain personal information. Short for quick response codes, QR codes are two-dimensional barcodes, the ones that look like a bug splat, the black and white square things, that automatically open a web browser or app when they're scanned using a phone camera. Restaurants, parking garages, merchants, and charities display them to make it easy for people to open online menus or make online payments. QR codes are also used in security-sensitive contexts. Two-factor authentication apps sometimes use QR codes when enrolling a new account. The ubiquity of QR codes and the trust placed in them hasn't been lost on scammers, however. For more than 2 years now, parking lot kiosks that allow people to pay through their phones have been a favorite target. Scammers paste QR codes over legitimate ones. The scam QR codes lead to lookalike sites that funnel funds to fraudulent accounts rather than the ones controlled by the parking garage. In other cases, emails that attempt to steal passwords or install malware on user devices use QR codes to lure targets to malicious sites. Because the QR code is embedded into the email as an image, anti-phishing security software can't detect that the link it leads to is malicious. Last week, the Federal Trade Commission warned consumers to be on the lookout for these types of scams. The warning came nearly 2 years after the FBI issued a similar advisory. An additional warning comes, additional word of caution when it comes to QR codes. Codes used to enroll a site into two-factor authentication from Google Authenticator, Authy, or another authenticator app provide the secret seed token that controls the ever-changing one-time password displayed in these apps. Don't allow anyone to view such QR codes. Re-enroll the site in the event the QR code is exposed. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you is scammers are using QR codes. Your choices are, I use them all the time. I have used them, yes. I'll stop using them immediately. I'll try to be more careful. I never use them. You mean those ugly bug splat things? So far we've got 21 votes. And I never use them is edged out. I have used them, yes. And so vote on the poll. And that's easy enough to do. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And also, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. I have seen more and more QR codes recently. We've been doing a bunch of blood draws and stuff like that. And a lot of the places that you go to, you don't even go in the door.
Yeah.
Outside the door, there's a QR code and you...
Stick your arm through the hole?
Stick your arm through a hole.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go any farther with that. But it's you scan a QR code at the door and you sign in through the app. And you got to be careful. You know, I always look and see where I've been sent to.
Yeah, most of the scanning programs I've seen show you the preview right. of the URL before it opens it. So make sure it makes sense to you. But
exactly.
No one looks at stuff like that.
Mm-mm. Right. But that's the thing you should do. And we did a test at U of R. At RIT. U of R.
Where did you work?
Yeah, exactly. I'm old and I'm retired in the hell with where I worked. Where we put up QR codes for a bunch of things. And, of course, doesn't somebody come along and stick a whole bunch of QR codes up that Rickrolled everybody?
Yeah.
But that's okay, too. Rickrolls aren't malicious, at least. They're annoying, but they're not malicious. So be careful when you use QR codes. As Steve said, almost every app will give you a little preview, at least, of the URL you're going to. And if it doesn't look like the URL you think you're going to, don't go there. Sorry, you were going to say?
I was going to say, I think I read somewhere once that someone actually Rickrolled Rick Astley. Sent here, look at this. And it was, oh, jeez.
I mean, I've put QR codes on. When I first started the SNCC newsletter, when I stopped doing the newspaper, I had cards that had a QR code on them. People could just scan the QR code, show up at my site, see what I had,
mm-hmm.
pay for the newsletter, whatever. And we've used it at the coffee stand for a bunch of stuff.
So every time somebody makes something new and easy and convenient, the bad guys screw it up for us.
They screw it up for us. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy holidays.
And the same to you.
Yeah, I've heard that called quishing schemes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they got to make up a word, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this week it appears that YouTube has dropped a hammer on ad blockers. I went into my YouTube site, and none of the things told me how to safeguard YouTube from my ad blocker. I went crazy, so finally I went back to what I mentioned a couple weeks ago, FreeTube.
Yep.
And I got FreeTube, and on my Linux distribution, I use ClickGrab if I want to download educational content. But I was kind of surprised that, like, uBlock Origin and AdBlock Plus, it's very difficult to find out how to put YouTube on an approved list. And I just thought I'd like to hear your comment.
Well, I'm using uBlock Origin, and it worked last night for me. I did not see any ads, so I'm not sure quite. Are you using the latest, newest version? What I found was in some cases you have to uninstall uBlock Origin and install the newest version to get it to work.
I didn't have that, but like I say, I went to FreeTube and I just transferred my subscriptions over to FreeTube, and now I'm watching videos without any ads.
Yep, that works. That absolutely works. But like I said, I had...
And there was also AdBlock Plus. I couldn't figure out how to do it on AdBlock Plus. I think I finally did figure out AdBlock Plus. You had to actually type the URL into a thing that looked like a line of codes.
Yeah, you can add on most of these. You can whitelist or blacklist sites, but you have to know where and how to do it.
Yeah,
like I said, uBlock Origin worked for me.
Okay.
Also, I should re-mention SponsorBlock, which is another add-in for your web browser that. You know, the interstitial ads that are actually done by the YouTube presenter?
Yeah.
Those, what happens is, there's a crowdsourcing that goes on. So the first time somebody sees the ad, in SponsorBlock, they can say, oh, this ad starts here and ends here. And when enough people do that, SponsorBlock will then skip that ad.
That's better than the mute button.
Yes. Yes, it is. So I use a combination of uBlock Origin and SponsorBlock, and YouTube is lovely for me. And we should probably mention that, let's face it, there's 400 hours of video uploaded to YouTube every second. And all of that costs space and time and effort. And Google certainly has every right on the planet to put ads in your viewing stream. The thing that annoys the heck out of me is when that ad comes up in the middle of a word.
Yeah. They could easily hear the pause between words, yes, or sentences and put it there.
And particularly if it's a song I'm listening to, that just, it's only happened once or twice,
yeah,
but it really annoys me. And now YouTube is saying they want people to put, YouTube creators, they call them, the YouTube creators, to put ad spacing in their videos. To say, you know,
yeah, leave a hole.
At 7 minutes, you don't have to put a hole in because they'll, mm-hmm, they'll pause the video.
Yeah.
But, at 7 minutes, put in a commercial break.
Or a tone code, because I've seen that in podcasts,
right, exactly,
too.
Exactly.
They're injecting local ads into my national podcasts.
Right.
Through some mechanism where, you know, there's a tone, insert ad here, and it does.
Right. So they're talking about doing that. So, but again, if you've got uBlock Origin and SponsorBlock, the likelihood that you'll see ads is infinitely reduced. Okay, Bill. Anything else?
No, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, but like I said, you know, or you could pay for YouTube TV.
Yeah, I get ads for that all the time. There was a meme going around. Someone had tweeted to YouTube, you know, maybe not put an advertisement in front of how to do CPR videos.
Yeah.
And YouTube responded, said, if you don't like the ads, you can subscribe to YouTube.
Yep.
Yeah, don't put an ad in front of life-saving things, you know?
Right. You would think that would be something they would do, but apparently not. Anyway, here's our next caller, Jim from Fairport, New York. Hi, Jim. What's up?
Well, if I want to listen to WXXI, I can. There are a couple of ways on Android that I can say listen to NPR or listen to WXXI News. I don't seem to be able. I can do that with other stations too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't seem to be able to do that with Jazz 901. Is there an easy way to do that?
Why, yes. And in fact, if you go to our website at soundbites.org, it will tell you how to do that. So what you do is you can listen on your smart speaker. You just ask it to play Jazz 901 on TuneIn.
On TuneIn, okay.
And it will do so. You can also, of course, download the Jazz 90.1 mobile app for Android or Apple.
There's also a...
You can go to the website and click the Listen Live button.
There's a TuneIn app for Android directly.
There's a TuneIn app for Android.
All the other TuneIn stations.
Right. So there are plenty of ways to look. And in fact, if you go to our website at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, scroll down on the right, you'll see Listen Live. And there's a whole bunch of ways to do it, and they're all listed there.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Fabulous. Thanks.
Yeah, that becomes the trick, is you got to know which streaming network the show is on you want to watch so that you can add that to your query.
Still your name?
Yep. It's, and that
Where are you coming from, Brian?
That was a bit of an issue that I had when I first... When I first started doing, putting that together, figuring out how to do it. Luckily, yeah, Rob knew, so I just asked him. But it's Jazz 901 on TuneIn is the magic.
It's not 90.1, it's 901.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Gates, New York. Hi, Brian, what's up?
Not much, guys, but I will tell you, I have paid my dues.
Excellent.
I'm a member. So
we love to hear that. Thank you.
Now, here's an interesting question.
Probably not.
I know. I live in the suburbs, okay?
Yeah.
The houses are spaced, you know, like suburban spacing, a couple yards apart.
Right.
My printer is on my north wall. My neighbor to the north has their printer on the south wall. And they're the same printer.
Uh-oh.
Not always, but sometimes, what she prints shows up in my printer.
Well, you... she must have your Wi-Fi network password and is connecting to your Wi-Fi in order for that to happen.
I don't know. I don't think I ever gave it to her. Not that I would mind. She's a very nice lady, you understand.
Yes.
But is there any solution to that?
It is likely. Is it an HP printer?
Yeah, they're both HPs.
And what many HP printers do is have their own network.
Wi-Fi Direct.
Right.
Which lets you print directly to a printer without needing the upward Wi-Fi.
Right.
So, that's probably what's going on, yeah.
Right. So you should be able to, and again, it depends on which printer you have, but you should be able to go into it either through the buttons on the front or through the web interface and turn off Wi-Fi Direct. Now, that means you've got to have it set up properly on your network so that you can still print to it.
Yeah. Can you print to the printer yourself without switching Wi-Fi networks on your computer?
Yeah.
Yeah. So your printer is connected to your private Wi-Fi. It's also possibly creating a secondary Wi-Fi that's probably named, you know, HP Envy 6B432.
Right.
The MAC address. And so your neighbor is picking your printer's Wi-Fi network instead of hers.
Right. So if you've both got, let's say, an HP Envy, yours will be HP Envy 123, hers will be HP Envy 234, and she just picked the wrong one. So if you turn off Wi-Fi Direct, she should not see your printer anymore. Or just move your printer to a different wall.
Yeah, right. Great. In a small office is already very crowded.
Yeah, I understand that. But so the easiest thing to do would be to turn off Wi-Fi Direct. That should do it.
All right. Well, we'll give that a try. I had something else I was going to ask you, but now that's gone. So we'll let somebody else get in.
Well, it happens at your age. Call back if you remember the thing and our phone number.
So one thing you could do is look in your Wi-Fi network list, and if you see her printer, you can print a page saying, you know, please don't print to my printer.
That would do it.
Make her printer print
well,
weird
can
things.
He change the name of the printer also?
Yeah, but
generally speaking, yes.
Yeah, just change it to his name so that when the
Brian's printer. Yeah.
But turning off Wi-Fi Direct will stop anyone else from printing if they're happy to walking by.
And having Wi-Fi, and everybody should hear this, if you have an HP printer and other brands too, and they have a direct network available to them, like Wi-Fi Direct, they are a way for bad guys to get into your network.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
So you'll see that in your own Wi-Fi network list. You'll see your regular Wi-Fi network name, and then you'll see another one that says HP whatever, brother whatever, that printer is generating its own Wi-Fi network too.
Right. Yeah. And I see those actually fairly regularly as I'm wandering around my neighborhood.
Yeah, you can scan, and they're usually wide open.
Right.
It's an easy way through,
I'm looking for a post on how to turn it off, and also I can find is how to turn it on.
So do the opposite.
So follow that backwards, yeah,
exactly.
I guess.
Exactly. All right.
I do most things backwards. All right, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Have you turned it off and back on yet?
Yeah.
That happened to me this week. I had a customer who couldn't see their main hard drive, and I get there, and it's turned off.
Sorry, say again?
Yep.
Okay, Brian, hold on.
I got to tell people.
It's interesting. He turned his mic off, but he's still coming through quite loud.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting.
We know who's next.
Right.
But I've already forgotten.
Brian.
So
Brian
until he hands you the piece of paper.
Possibly a different Brian this time. Yep. Well, he's in Rochester, so either Brian ran really fast Or it's a different Brian. Hi, Brian. What's up?
No, it's the same one. basically, I went through my stuff again, and I looked into the BIOS, and I have three options. I can either do a LAN, I can do my hard drive, or I can do the DVD. So what I'm wondering is, from what I've been told, it looks like BIOS is actually firmware instead of software.
Yep.
Okay. So basically that means I'm going to be stuck on a Mac. So my next question would be, is there another distro I might be able to get that I would be able to download onto my computer, considering apparently these things are so big now, they don't fit on a DVD. Any other thoughts on how I might be able to get a different flavor into my computer?
Well, there's a couple of ways you can do it.
Okay.
One way is to update your BIOS.
Well, I can't update it. Unless I get a whole new board.
We said, like, there was a call last week.
That was him.
Oh, and we told him to do the small version.
Yeah.
The light version, which will put the initial stuff in there. And then from there, you can then, once the initial stuff is in there, then you can upgrade it off the internet.
It looks like for Mint, it doesn't. They've got three different versions, but none of them looked like they were small versions. They had some specialized stuff. That's why I'm kind of questioning this.
Well, not everything does. Hold on.
Okay.
What just happened? Apparently, I have no idea on how to type. Interesting. Okay. All right. Okay. Don't know what's happening.
Computers have a mind of their own?
Apparently, they do. There is a small ISO for Linux Mint.
There is?
Yes.
Do they have a special name for it?
Oh, wait. Hold on. Apparently. Nope. It looks like you can't. Mint doesn't have one. Oh, no. There's a script that some people use called minimal-mint. You do a search for that, you should be able to find it.
Okay.
It's not new, but it should still work. And on GitHub.
Okay.
Mint doesn't apparently care if you can't install it. I'm sorry, that's just, they clearly have not made one.
That's what I seem to be finding with Mint.
Yeah, I do not see a small one. Interesting.
Yeah, it looks like if you download Mint, you get what you get, and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you can download the XFCE version or the Mate version or the Cinnamon version, but those are your choices.
Right. And that's not the kind of thing that I need, then. Okay. Do you know of any other...
Hold on. Stay on the line. We'll come back to you in just a couple of minutes. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Brian from Rochester, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Brian from Rochester on the line. You still there, Brian?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you have only a CD player, correct?
Yeah, I can do a DVD, yeah.
You can do DVD?
Yeah.
Well, Linux Mint will fit on a DVD.
Yes, Linux Mint did, and that's what I've got on there right now. And that's how I put it on.
Okay.
So, in order, but it won't allow me to do part of what I need to do for part of my customization. So what I'm wondering is if there's another flavor or distro that I can use that makes a small disk so I can put it into my system.
Most Linuxes will fit on a DVD.
I had problems with, I think it was MX, and I think it was SUSE at one point. They seem to be too big because it just won't go onto the DVD.
And you didn't find a mini version of that one?
Not for Mint, no.
Okay, but we just said Mint fits on a DVD, and you used it on a DVD.
Well, that was Mint was the only one that supposedly went on my DVD, and I was able to install it.
Okay.
But we're thinking maybe we got a small version of Mint. There's something radically wrong here, and I don't know what it is.
Well, what isn't working for you inside of Mint?
Yeah.
Well, the problem is, I've had other distros before, and I've always been able to open up tar files. I've been able to go to the repositories, and they'll put anything I want on. It checks for dependencies, all that jazz. That's no longer functional. So something is definitely out of whack here, and that's why I'm thinking maybe a different distro might be my answer.
Well, there are many, many distros. In fact, I just put Kubuntu on a new laptop that I got.
Okay.
That one does do USB. So I was able to download that. But
I just found an article on the 9 smallest Linux distros, but that sort of implies it's for small computers, not small downloads.
Right, right, right.
But that still may get me around it, because then I could put it on a DVD and then it would see it.
Right. Right, exactly. What you really need to... I mean, there's... Okay.
So Ubuntu 23 is 4.2 gigs, so you would need a double-layer DVD.
I don't have one of those.
Right. So Ubuntu itself does have a minimal CD.
Okay.
Image.
Okay.
The previous version, the full version of Ubuntu 22, is 3.8 gigs, so that would fit on a single-layer DVD.
Right, but there is a minimal CD version that would fit on a regular CD, and it essentially loads enough of the operating system to give you a graphical front end, get you on the network,
get you started,
so you can load the rest of it. So Ubuntu itself should do that.
Okay, a regular Ubuntu should.
What you want to search for is Ubuntu minimal ISO.
Okay.
And there are several that have that. Kali has it, I believe. Arch has it.
Oh.
There's, of course, Tiny Core Linux, damn small Linux, but that's a little different.
Okay.
But those should all work.
Okay. I'll gladly give those a try.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
And I have posted a link to that installation instructions.
Yep. If anybody here knows anything about a company called Daegoo, D-E-G-O-O. They're offering 10 terabytes of cloud storage for life for $100.
Wow.
I just saw that this morning. I haven't had any chance.
Let's see what Tom's Guide thinks of them.
To check them out. So if anybody knows anything about them.
Tom's Guide's, the cons say it only has basic functionality. Well, maybe that's all they want. And there's no desktop app. So it's cloud only.
Yeah, so? I mean, that's, so?
Yeah.
Right.
So you have to drag it to a cloud icon in your web browser.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Linda from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda, what's up?
Oh, everything's fine. I don't have a question. I just want to wish you guys a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, Linda. It's been a while since we've heard from you. It's delightful to hear your voice.
Yeah. I've been in the hospital, so, you know, and the reception there is not very good.
Well, I hope you're getting better, and I hope you have an amazing holiday.
Yeah, you too, guys.
Take care, young lady.
Keep smiling.
I will. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Linda. Bye-bye. Well, that was joyful.
Very nice.
Yeah. Blast from the past.
That was great. We've always loved Linda. She's been loyal.
She's been a faithful listener. Sure, easy for me to say. Listener for decades.
Yeah. And she showed up at every event we did. It's great to hear from her. It's great to hear from her. What were we talking about before that? Oh, mini distros? Is that what we're talking about? You can, many of them have a mini distro. I don't, there are certain very old laptops that simply will not boot from USB. I have one. And I ended up putting a minimal Ubuntu on it.
So USB came out and popularized in 1998.
But it really didn't become a bootable thing for about another 5 years.
But yeah, the irony was it was initially developed by Intel, and Apple was the first major company to use it on the very first iMac.
Right.
But PC companies never really caught on for a while until peripheral companies started making USB devices, because that was the only connection the iMac had.
Right.
And now suddenly there's a lot of USB peripherals, and some PC companies started saying, oh. And then when Intel added USB controller into the chip, okay, sure, we can do USB now.
Right. So, yeah, well, because of the chip, it was there in the chip already.
In the chip now.
Didn't cost them anything.
It took a while to supplant serial and parallel.
Oh, the laptop that I got yesterday has a Thunderbolt port on it.
Yeah, Intel has Thunderbolt in their higher end chips.
Yeah, so that was. I have to toot my own horn a little bit. Well, not that I did anything.
Yeah,
Woot,
you got lucky.
Woot had
your Google foo.
My Google foo. Woot had a sale, a scratch and dent sale. Also, it was a grab bag sale. So
explain for the folks.
Well, basically, you got a laptop. Minimum specifications were an i5 with 8 gig of RAM and a 256 gig SSD card for $183. And I thought, okay, it's a bit of a scratch and dent sale. So, you get what you get.
Yep.
So I said, okay. What showed up for me was a Dell Latitude laptop, 14-inch screen, 16 gig of RAM, 512 gig hard drive, 90-watt charger instead of the 60-watt charger, and it is pristine. It is in absolutely pristine condition.
You're going to leave Windows on it?
Windows is already gone.
That didn't last a day.
The first thing I did was update Windows because you can't not.
Yeah.
The second thing I did was update the BIOS because, like last week, we talked about the BIOS issue that everybody has to do. And then the third thing I did was I put Kubuntu on it because I wanted to play with the KDE Plasma desktop. And that's done.
Yep.
Done.
Playtime.
They've got an Apple Watch Ultra refurbished grade A for $300 off.
Wow. That means it was at least a $900 product.
It was the $800 watch on sale for $5.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
This is the Ultra that has the diving computer in it and the mountain climbing computer in it.
All the things I need, absolutely, no question.
One of the podcasts I listened to, he had to buy one cause, to review it for you folks.
Yeah, exactly.
So when it was setting it up, it asked me if I was ever going to go diving to 100 meters. I said, yes. My pool is 3 feet deep. But sure, it asked. Okay, maybe.
Maybe,
yeah, sure.
Sure,
yeah. I'll do that.
I have a Pixel watch, and it's very upset that it has no sleep data on me. Yeah. I don't wear my watch 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems upset about that.
I have a app on my iPad I use for sleep tracking. So I don't, because I have to charge my watch sometime.
Exactly.
You can't wear it all the time when you sleep. And it uses audio to listen to you moving and snoring and whatnot. And it says it can distinguish between two people in the same bed. And I'm just, okay. So I'm trying to figure out how it physically knows that. I'm closer. So how does it know whether a soft noise is me or the soft noise is my wife?
Right.
But it's kind of interesting. It shows me how bad I sleep every night.
Exactly.
So it confirms what I knew.
Right. I don't need an app to tell me I don't sleep.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Oh, well, I'm caught up in the maze of Google help pages.
Okay.
Yeah. The problem I got, I actually have several different Google accounts.
Right.
And I'm trying this out on two different browsers. In one of my accounts, the Google, when you go to the nine-dot menu on the top right corner there,
yeah,
and you pull down, okay, Google Sites has disappeared from one of my accounts. I can't find the actual icon to click on. And I have looked and looked and looked for, like, literally a whole day trying to figure out how to fix that.
Does Google Sites still exist? They didn't cancel it, did they?
No. If I go to Google Drive, the file that I created for Sites is in Drive. When I click on it, it opens up the Drive page.
Now, if you go to sites.google.com, you get there directly, but it should be in that little menu up there. It's not in mine either. Is there a manage?
It used to be.
I don't see a manage either.
Did one of the updates take it out?
Yeah, I'm not seeing it. Interesting.
Probably another feature that Microsoft decided you didn't need or anybody else.
You mean it's not something I'm doing wrong? I can't believe it.
It apparently is not, Dave. And you know, I hope you're sitting down. But it doesn't look like it's you.
Starting September 1st, 2021, classic sites will not be viewable. You must convert to new sites.
Right.
Yeah, but that doesn't...
In my other accounts, it does show up in my other accounts.
Are they all personal accounts, or is one of them a workspace account?
I can say one and a half of them are workspace. I got my personal account, which thinks it's a workspace, although I never signed up for it, or I did and I forgot, but I never paid any money for it, so I can't figure out. I've got an actual workspace. I manage a nonprofit.
Does it show in the workspace version and not in the personal version?
Or vice versa?
Yeah.
It in the workspace version, it shows up in there, and I don't have to click on anything to get. Because there's three different ways here. It's actually in the Workspace Edition, so that's fine. In my personal account, which seems to be a Workspace account, even though I don't know that it is, I can't find it at all. And if you go down to the bottom of the nine dot menu there, it says see other apps or whatever. In mine, it says it says see. Hang on a minute here. I forgot the wording.
More from Google.
Yeah, more from Google Workspace, Marketplace. And, of course, there's nothing there. And then a third account, an old junk account I haven't used for years, it's normal. Everything's regular. The Google Sites, I have to actually click at the bottom of that page where I forget what it says, but it's not the workspace. It's just see other Google apps. And I can eventually find it. So in two of those three accounts, how do I get Sites back onto that pull-down page under the nine dots? Or I don't.
I don't think you do. I don't think you can't. As far as I know, you cannot add or remove things from that menu.
Yeah, there were some articles that sort of hinted like you could, but when I tried it, like, it wasn't there. Like, you know, click on this. There was no such thing when I went to my
All the posts I'm seeing are saying, yes, yeah, submit feedback that you want that feature back.
Yeah, so they've removed the feature from some. You know, the good news is you can always bookmark it and just click on the bookmark, which is really all that menu is. But I get it. But it looks like you're just going to have to do it as a bookmark. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a type A, so it really bothers me. So
yeah, I understand. Sorry, Dave.
I got enough other questions to fill up a whole show, but we'll call it quits for now.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Yep. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
I hope this doesn't imply that sites as a service is
going away. It's still there. You can still create your own sites. And I'm not entirely sure what Google Sites costs. I think it's
I know they shut down Google Domains.
Yeah. Google Sites is free if you have a Google or Gmail account. There are no web hosting fees, but it's also a fairly limited thing. You know, you're limited to the amount of storage you have and the number of pages you have and et cetera, but it is free. So if you're putting up a brochure page, you can do that. That's doable. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Neil from Honey Eye Falls, New York. Hi, Neil. What's up?
Good afternoon, gents. Thank you so much. I set my watch to 12 noon every Saturday for you.
Thank you.
So I have a Samsung S20 Android, and I receive text messages with a chosen tone as a notification. And I installed the Nest doorbell camera and the Nest floodlight camera. I installed Google Home on my mobile phone, and I am getting multiple notifications with the identical tone. Recently, I started a job where upwards of 60 people can text me, and so I'm tackling that by every time a work-related text comes in on my personal phone, I go into the three-dot menu in the text, and I pull up notifications, and I change the tone.
Right.
So I'm getting work-related tone notifications for work-related texts, and I'm getting tones for personal texts. I cannot get the Google Nest cameras I can't change the tone of those. And I have tried multiple options under notifications or in the settings menu on the Android phone, going to notifications. I've tried multiple different ways to do it. And when I do go to the notifications prompt, the first choice that comes up is the apps, notifications for apps. And I am able to go down to Google Home, open it, and I cannot change the tone.
I'm just opening Home myself right now.
It's coming as an actual notification and not as a text message, is it?
Yeah, so what it'll say is vehicle in driveway or person, or these cameras can even differentiate that it's a package.
Okay, when I go into Home.
Yeah, on my mobile phone?
On your phone.
Yeah.
Excuse me, when I go into settings.
Yep.
Notifications.
Yep.
App notifications, Home.
Correct.
I can set different tones. Sounds.
I can't do that.
Cameras and critical alerts. So what I do is when I open Home, I see a bunch of toggle switches.
Right.
If you
see, so my choices are allow notifications, which I've toggled on. Then it says allow sound and vibration or silent, and then I see three simulated screens with toggles. One is lock screen allowed, badge is allowed.
Okay, so on that first one, which says all home notifications, you do not see other, which says camera notifications, critical alerts, and other notifications?
Do not.
You're in the home app.
Yeah.
Update the app?
Okay.
See if there's an app update, maybe?
Because I'm seeing it.
Okay, so I don't get those choices. And this is a relatively new phone, and I just did the install for the two cameras. So I'll go into home and do an update.
Yeah, do an update. And the other thing, of course, is I got to be honest.
Yeah.
It's a Samsung phone.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the big dog has to be the last one to mark the tree when Google updates.
That's funny
something.
Because I can see a dog marking a tree on the camera.
Yeah. When Google updates something, first what happens is it gets updated inside Google, which means it goes directly to a Pixel phone, which is what I have.
All right. So I am up for an upgrade. You like the Pixel phone?
No, I love the Pixel phone.
Okay.
It's pure Google with no other carrier stuff.
Right. So there's no cruft, there's no bloat, and you get stuff fast.
Oh, okay.
Nick and I have both been Pixel users. I think I was the first one. And
you might have been.
Because I had the one that almost would set my butt.
Well, I had the original Google Nexus phone, but then
I got the 3, which they said was going to set my butt on fire.
Right.
And they tried to get me away from it, and I go, no, I'll wait until the next one comes out.
That was the Note, wasn't it?
Dave, they were not going to charge you anything extra to set your butt on fire. That was going to be free.
That's free, and that's a service we don't see much anymore, doggone it.
I guess I was supposed to be, you know, impressed.
Okay, so I think I've made a decision here to go to Verizon, do an upgrade, but get a Google phone.
I can't say enough about it. Now I have the 7.
Yeah.
Which I absolutely love. They say the 8 is even better. I don't have one.
One thing I would suggest, instead of going to Verizon, to save yourself a little money, see if you can go to Google and buy it from them, because you might be able to buy it cheaper than making the monthly payments or buying it from Verizon. And you just take it into them and have them activate it.
The only difference is you pay it all at once on Google. Oh, no, you can do monthly.
Yeah.
But the other thing, too, is that sometimes the carriers have special deals where you get
Do your research and grab the best deal for you.
Well, as an aside, Dave, I was afraid that you were going to say, save yourself money and go to the S fighter. S-T. Take the worst mistake. It was 1 week of H-E double hockey sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Neil, I'm afraid we got to go. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Neil. Good luck. Let us know how you love your new phone. All right, that music tells us we are done for the first hour, but do not despair. There's another hour of the longest-running computer show coming your way. That's right, another hour of Dave Enright, another hour of Steve Ray, another hour of Nick Francesco, and another hour of you. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. You call. We talk, you ask, we answer. And we will be back in just a couple of minutes. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, at this exact moment in space and time, you are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Before we go any farther, we should talk a little bit about...
We got to go back to the phone.
Oh, we got Neil still on the line? Sorry, Neil. Apparently, I just need better drugs. Are you still there? Neil?
Nope, maybe not.
Nope, maybe not. We're done with Neil. Okay. I was right. Ha, ha!
Ha, ha! What's your name?
We should talk a little bit about...
I'm sorry, say again?
Stocking stuffers.
Marty, where are you going?
My suggestion is always... thumb drives.
Yep.
It's
very reputable brands.
Reputable brands.
Don't buy the cheapest thing you find because it's probably fake.
Yep, yep, yep. So buy a decent, reputable brand. I bought a 10-pack of Micro Center 64 gigs. And so far, knock on wood, they've been great. And you know, throw a couple in people's stockings. They're inexpensive. They're useful. And heaven knows everybody, every single human being who has a computer on the planet could use another USB yep. thumb drive. And again, 64 gig, not terribly expensive, and a good size for backing up many different things. All right, back to not if you're a photographer or an audio engineer, 64 gigs is not enough. I understand that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the average human being. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Marty from Fairport, New York. Hi, Marty, what's up?
Hi, I listen to you periodically.
Thank you.
And I hear about backups, and I've got a MacBook Air 2018, I believe, and it's the smallest drive, not the smallest drive, but the smallest memory that they gave at that time, which was not 256, probably one, whatever it is.
Oh, storage. Yeah, 128 storage.
Yeah,
was.
Storage. Yeah. So, and I also bought one of these small, the company, I can't remember the company. It's a very small solid-state memory unit. And I've never done a backup. I mean, I'm backed up in the cloud, as far as I know.
Well, what cloud backup service did you buy? Because that's the thing.
I didn't buy any. The only thing I have is the 50 gig.
That's not backup. That's cloud storage. That's not backup storage. No.
I think what I bought was about a one in the 100s or. I'm sorry, this is, you know, it's a well-known brand that they sold at Costco. Do I need a program to do it, or can I use the native apps on Apple?
Yeah, you can use the built-in program called Time Machine.
Yep. Okay.
And that backs up all of the data onto another drive, so you can go back in time and find your data if you lose something. There are other third-party programs that work. Some Western Digital and Seagate, sometimes those drives will come with a backup program. But Time Machine is built in and works really good.
Now, in your case, however, you've got a problem, which is you say you bought the smallest available units to do your backing up to. If your data are larger than your backup unit, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
So by default, Time Machine backs up everything on your computer.
Right.
You can remove things from the backup. So like you could remove applications because you can always reinstall those. And then just back up your home folder. It does make a catastrophic restore take longer because you can't just restore everything at once, but it doesn't take as much to back up. Although you can also get like a 1 terabyte spinning hard drive for $50-$60.
Right.
I've heard there's newer ones that are 1 terabyte that are solid state.
They are, but they're solid state drives are more expensive than spinning drives.
Okay.
They are faster, which is an advantage. But as a backup drive, you don't need the fast, and so you don't need the more expensive.
I just got Western Digital 1 terabyte hard drive for $49.95.
Mm-hmm.
Spinning. Wow.
USB?
SSD.
Really? USB?
SSD.
Wow.
Western Digital through Amazon.
Cool.
Wow.
Matter of fact, I ordered two of them. Because I had to send one back because it got damaged in shipping, which was their fault.
That was a SATA drive, not a USB drive.
SSD.
Yeah, doesn't matter. What interface does it have?
Yeah, it's not SATA. It's SATA.
Yeah, an internal SATA drive. So you would need an external USB drive for backup.
Well, you can buy the adapters. Yeah. You've got a cable that you can put on the SATA drive, and it connects into a USB port.
Yeah, the SATA to USB adapters, although buying a USB drive to begin with is maybe a little more convenient.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you got to pay attention to do you have a USB 3 connector on your computer, and then get a USB 3 connector for your SATA drive, because USB 3 is much faster than USB 2, and backups have it. Not that you care for a backup, because if you do it at 2 a.m., who cares how long it takes?
Yeah. Yeah, on the Mac still doesn't hurt. I have simply a C drive, two C drives, or two C inputs. Is that what you're referring to?
Oh, yeah. So your type Cs would be probably 3.1.
Yeah.
So when you're looking to buy a external drive, it'd be easiest to find one that comes with a type C cable.
Shouldn't it be on the Mac for USB, the blue?
No, they have the C type C connectors.
Oh, connectors. Okay, yeah. That's right. The Mac don't go
right. Right. Yeah. They don't do the A type connectors. They do the C type. What we're saying is that on an A type connector, which is the square USB
that most drives will come with, unless you really look.
They have two choices. One is USB 2, and one is USB 3. And on most USB 3 connectors, the little internal ledge is blue. That's how you know it's a 3.
Oh, okay.
In USB-C,
they're all three.
So you're as long as you get a connector that is USB-C, you're good to go.
Yeah, here's a 5 terabyte for $134. 5 terabytes.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. That's,
I need that. Actually.
So you probably only need.
The one I purchased. I remember the name of it. I don't remember the size because I've never used it. I just.
Right. So at the very least, be careful what you back up, because you may overrun the capacity of the backup drive.
And Time Machine will tell you if there's not enough
space.
Right. So if this is a SanDisk. It's a small little...
Yep, they're a good brand.
That's a good brand.
Yeah, okay. So I should just see what it is. Minimum should be...
Generally, we like to say twice the capacity of your storage drive. So if you've got a 128 storage drive, then a 256 backup drive. That way you can go back in time farther and farther.
Right.
So there's more room to grow. Okay. But with spinning hard drives, you usually start at 1 terabyte.
Right.
Or 1,000 gigabytes.
Right. Okay. It sounds really good. I appreciate it. I'm glad. I hear about the backup thing all the time.
You need backups. Believe me, Marty.
Eventually,
you're
either going to accidentally delete a file and need it back, or the computer's going to crash, or someone's going to spill something in it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to lose your data.
Yep.
Okay. Well, very much appreciated. I'll give it a try, and I'll look into it further now.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Marty.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's... again, we cannot overemphasize this. You don't have enough backups. You simply don't.
There's two types of people, those that have lost data already,
right,
and those that are going to lose their data.
Right. But there's nobody who is never going to lose their data.
Well, it may not be a critical loss because you have it backed up.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
As long as you've got that, backup, no data loss is critical.
I can't.
One of the things we see all the time are those companies that get ransomware demands. Well, if you've got the right kind of backup, you don't care.
Yep.
You just wipe everything out and restore from backup. Boom, easy.
Some of the ransomware people have now gone to another step of releasing the instead of just encrypting the data, they'll copy all the data off and then start releasing trade secrets in public because too many people weren't paying the ransom.
Right.
So now we're going to embarrass you in public or release your trade secrets, so you pay us anyway.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hi, Bill. What's up?
Yeah, your recommendation of flash drives. I just wanted to make a note to the people. For years now, there has been a major scam on flash drives.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You can get a plug-in flash drive that says it's got a terabyte of data, and you get it home, you go into devices, and you look it up, and it says it's got a terabyte. In reality, it might have 30 gigabytes.
Right, or less.
Much less.
This is one of the biggest scams, and Amazon does nothing about it. They don't do any product quality testing.
Well, and
I would highly advise the people we're talking to, don't buy a flash drive unless it's a name brand.
Name brand. And it tends to be the larger capacities that are
one that was 256, and it had 28 on it. I figured, okay, I'm safe.
Yeah.
It's only 256.
Yep.
And it had the phone and the computer plug-in things on it, the C and the USB. What looks like SSD drives are doing the same thing on that, too, besides the memory sticks. And I'm just so upset at Amazon that they don't do any quality control.
Well, and it's worse than that. Steve Gibson on Security Now wrote a program called ValiDrive to validate your drive, and it will tell you what the capacity really is. And someone wrote in and said that he bought so during testing, Steve bought a dozen flash drives on Amazon, and they were all fake. One of the listeners said he did the same thing, bought a drive, it was fake. He put a bad review on that part and sent feedback to Amazon saying, this is fake. Here's the proof that it's fake. Amazon removed the bad review saying there's no validity to it. So not only don't they care, they actively remove bad reviews so that they can sell more fake drives.
Yep.
It's just horrible.
Yeah. But when you buy a brand name,
it's much more like, make sure it's spelled right and the logo is right.
Right.
Fake brand names too, yeah.
Speaking of Amazon, I have a friend who's a photographer who wrote an ebook, and somebody else copied his ebook and started selling on Amazon as his.
Mm-hmm.
And he got in contact with Amazon. They said there was nothing they could do about it.
Right.
Amazon is not perfect.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely right.
They want to make as much money as they can.
That's right. They don't care.
Yeah, so people beware of these cheap flash drives and SSD drives.
Yeah, if it sounds too good to be true, it is.
Yeah.
If you see a bunch of flash drives for $50 and then there's another one that says it's $20, that's probably bad.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. Yeah, the ones I bought were all 64 gig and they were from a company called Microcenter, which is a well-known.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is a well-known company, so.
Well, you get, like anything else, you got to do your homework.
That's right.
Don't jump at the very first one. Do some investigating and see what's out there.
Right. So yeah, be careful. But those are
the 1 terabyte and 2 terabyte SSD or flash drives that are like $30 or $20 when normally $20 is a 64 gig drive.
Right. Right. But yeah, so. I have them and I use them. Of course, one of the major things that I use them for is putting Linux distros on so I can test them, play with them. And again, nowadays, if you're going to do something like that, make sure you've got a USB 3 connector on your computer and USB 3 flash drives, because that will be much faster.
And it's not just that the drives are fake. They claim they're the full terabyte.
Right.
And they'll happily accept a terabyte's worth of data, but you can never get the data back again because there's nowhere to actually write it to.
Right.
So these companies have gone to the trouble of writing a fake BIOS, basically,
yep,
for their flash drives to lie about the data they're collecting.
Yep.
Then that was cheaper than actually just making a real flash drive.
Yep, exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Hi, Gary, what's up?
Good, how are you guys?
Peachy, you?
Good. I have a question. Talking about ads, blocking ads. How do you block ads from Facebook videos? They're a pain in the neck.
Well, yeah. There are a number of ad block programs that you can use. I'm a fan of uBlock Origin, and it's spelled like it sounds. The letter U, the word block.
I got that.
I use that, that works for me. But you're saying it doesn't work for you?
Yeah, I don't know how to configure it in that program. How to it blocks everything else on the internet, but Facebook is. I used to use FB Buster or whatever they call it. That doesn't seem to work very good either.
Now you have to differentiate. There are two types of ads. There are ads that are added onto a video, and there are the ads inside the video that the person who created the video either is doing or inserted themselves.
Yeah.
Now, those, nobody can stop.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, there's a program called Sponsor Block that does mm-hmm. that for YouTube, but I don't know that there's anything that does it for Facebook.
Yeah.
And so if it's that sort of ad, I got no help for you.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Thank you much. Bye.
And the problem is if too many people block too many ads, more and more sites are going to go pay because that's the only way they can make money. Where I'm hearing from all the podcasts I listen to that sponsorship is down, paid advertising is down, the amount they'll pay is down, but our expenses haven't dropped any. So
right.
Leah Laporte's This Week in Tech just had to shut down all their live streams.
Yep.
For the cost that takes. So now they're only live streaming on YouTube during the show.
And well, we see that here.
Yeah.
You know, the station has an app and streaming live on the web, and that ain't cheap. And yes, advertising and in our case, sponsorships and pledges are down. And, you know, what do? You either have to...
You got to cut corners somewhere.
Cut corners. And there's no other option. I'm sorry. That's just the way
the world
works.
It's just the way the economy's going. Since COVID hit, everybody's cutting back.
Right.
Things are costing more. We understand, you know, it's...
Well, the economy's actually doing fairly well.
It's cool. In fact, I just paid $2.96 for gas.
Yeah. Down from $4.
Yeah, it's coming down.
Well, and the crazy thing is it's 30, 40 cents different across the county.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing of it is other things like groceries and that's still slow to come down, but the rest of the economy is doing good. Jobs are, you know, still at an all-time record there that people, you know.
But it hasn't caught up in the giving sector.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's where the problem lies right now. We're you know, those things still...
cautious. People are cautious.
People are cautious. And I get that. I do understand that. But then, you know, they complain when something goes away. Well, you can't have it both ways. You just cannot.
Google used to have a product where, since Google is the largest advertiser on the internet, they used to have a product where you could pay your advertising fee yourself and they would still block the ads.
Right.
So they'd block it at their end because they knew you were already paying. And I don't think they do that anymore.
Right.
Probably not enough people would volunteer to pay to block ads.
Probably.
Right. It's a long road to get to where we are, and that road is slowing down a little bit, and that's just life the way it is. So I'm not sure what to say about that anymore. That's
how life is going.
That's how life is going. All right, so Apple. On Monday, Apple pushed out the public releases of iOS 17.2, iPadOS 17.2, macOS Sonoma 14.2, and watchOS 10.2, and tvOS 17.2. Whew. iOS 17.2 and iPadOS, why can't they all be 17.2? Just make the numbers all the same.
They tried that, and people were confused by it skipped a generation. So that
only
that,
once.
Yeah. Well, and so that
that's the smartest thing someone at RIT ever said to me. We were in a meeting and talking about making some major changes, and everybody was complaining that people were going to be very upset about it. One person just said, "Only for 4 years."
Yep.
At the end of 4 years, there won't be anybody who remembers the old way.
Yeah.
Anyway, so iPadOS 17.2 and iOS 17.2's flagship feature is the new Journal app, which Apple teased when it first introduced iOS 17 earlier. The app mimics several existing popular journaling apps in the App Store from third-party developers, but leverages data from your phone, photos, workouts, and other Apple apps to make journaling suggestions. Other features include the ability to tap a catch-up arrow, not catch-up like Heinz, but catch-up, to scroll to the first missed messages in a conversation to messages, the ability to take spatial video photos for later viewing on Vision Pro, and several tweaks and additions to the weather app. There are a few iPhone 15 Pro and iPhone 15 Pro Max specific updates too. The Translate app is now one of the main supported mappings for the action button, and Apple says there's been improvements to the telephoto camera focusing feature in some situations. There are still a couple of iOS features that were initially promised for the iOS 17 cycle that haven't yet materialized. AirPlay for hotel room TVs and collaborative playlists in Apple Music. These features should arrive sometime in 2024, which we're almost at. As is so often the case now, the latest macOS update 14.2 is comparatively modest. macOS gets some of the same tweaks to messages and weather. Additionally, enhanced autofill identifies fields in PDFs and other forms, enabling you to populate them with information such as names and addresses from your contacts. Are you up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
And we'll just wait for the inevitable 0.1 patch that fixes the problems that they introduced.
Well, exactly. That's, you know, we talk about that all the time.
Yep.
Wait for the 0.1 patch. These are not critical security updates, so we are advising you to wait. When something
unless
is
you really, really want that feature.
Well, right. And then, and then you put up with whatever it is.
Yeah.
But if it's a critical security update, you know, a zero-day exploit, something that's already in the wild, we suggest you update now. But if it's just a cool feature set and you aren't so desperate for that cool feature set you can't sleep, wait for the 0.1 update.
Yeah.
It'll be here in a week and a half anyway.
It'll save you a lot of aggravation,
too. It'll save you a lot of aggravation. So, of course, on the other side of that, if everybody waits, there won't be a 0.1 because nobody's complaining about the 0.0. So, yeah. But
no, there are always going to be folks that have to have it.
Yep.
No matter what, they got to have it to say that they got it.
I'm looking at Apple's security update page, and there are security fixes in these patches, too.
Then if
I don't know if they're 0 days or not.
Right. Apple's not good at telling you that.
Yeah.
But
it tells you the CVE number, so then you can go look up to see.
Right. Well, and then there's the difference between, in many cases, for example, if I've got a Pixel phone, I don't have a problem updating immediately because I know Google has tested on the Pixel phone. And Apple, if you have an iPhone, Apple has tested on the iPhone. Now, if you have a lot of third-party apps, there may be problems with those third-party apps, but not with the phone itself. All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. And you can talk to us. You are listening to Soundbites, the longest running computer show in the known universe, right here on Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. 50 degrees on the 16th of December in Rochester, New York.
Yeah. Take it.
Yeah, I'll take it all day long.
And Florida, matter of fact, is supposed to get hit by some major storms.
Yeah,
working
tomorrow or today, later today.
Yeah, stay safe. I got a lot of family in Florida, and that I know of. And
it's coming right on up the coast.
Yep.
But they're saying the El Nino is supposed to really be explosive this year, which for us means we should have a very light winter.
Your lips to God's ears.
Yeah, well, it's the way the weather patterns are changing. I mean, I'm old. I go back to the days when I can remember a blizzard coming through here, and we were snowed in for 4 days.
I remember as a kid.
That wasn't unusual. Couple times a winter we'd have these.
Mm-hmm. I remember as a kid, I was a GCB, good Catholic boy. And every May Day, 1st of May, we would troop over from the school to the church for Mass, the Feast of Our Lady. The girls were always angry because on the 1st of May, they were bundled up in their winter coats and nobody could see their May Day dresses. And now it's never that cold on May 1st anymore.
No, no. It's, matter of fact, it's balmy weather, usually in the 50s.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walt from Greece, New York. Hi, Walt. What's up?
Hello there, all of you. I have a question about my Amazon Fire tablet, but first I'd like to make a comment about the one gentleman who has this problem with Linux Mint.
Yeah.
Maybe he should try Linux Mint Debian Edition, and I suggest that because I have Linux Mint itself is based on Ubuntu, and I have a laptop that absolutely hates to work with Ubuntu. I've tried Xubuntu 3 times, and it runs horribly with it.
Yeah, not every set of hardware runs well with every version of Linux. It's weird.
Yes,
but
it is.
It's true.
Yeah.
Good suggestion. Thanks.
Yeah, Debian Edition, it may have all the stuff that he likes with Linux Mint. So now let me turn to my Amazon tablet. It's a HD 10, seventh edition, and so its security will drop as of this month from everything I'm reading.
Right.
All the updates. And I'm going to the internet, now what the heck can I do with it? Now they come along and say, okay, use it like a picture frame and go ahead and just put on documents and use it like a little reader, you know, download books from off onto a regular computer and download onto that. But then, is this something the others are coming along saying, oh, go ahead and use it like a camera. You know, go ahead and use it, tie it up to your network and use it as a security camera. And, oh, yeah, go ahead and you can go ahead and ask, I'll ask you to go ahead and give you news feeds. Isn't that getting onto the internet and then you're still being exposed?
Yes.
Okay, so those are all lies that people are putting on the internet.
Well, not lies. I mean, you can do that.
And there's no known vulnerability yet, but as soon as there is, speaking of which, the Mac OS updates that that we were talking about. They were bad enough. That there are security updates in all the 17.2s, but they're bad enough that they also went back to OS 16 and did some updates. They went back to Mac OS 13 and 12 and released those updates. So they are probably pretty critical updates to run.
Yeah.
So until someone finds an update that a bug that or breach that your device is not fixed for, it's still safe.
Right.
That might be a week. It might be a year.
Yeah.
After they stop supporting it.
It is possible to once. Okay. So on pretty much. It's a Kindle Fire, right?
It's an Amazon 10th edition. It's 10-inch. The 7th edition came out in 2017 or so.
Right.
So it's got 6 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
The Fire OS that's on it now.
Yes.
Is technically Android.
Yes. Right.
You can replace that with, quote, end quote, real Android.
Okay.
That will void your warranty.
Yeah, well, it's 6 years.
Exactly. So it's out of warranty anyway, so who cares? If you do it badly, you will brick it.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but oh well, at that point. But, you know, if it's not useful to you anyway, why not try this and see what happens? And as long as you follow the directions correctly, you should have no trouble.
Okay.
I've done this to a couple of Kindle Fire tablets. Again, every once in a while, Woot has a sale of old Fire tablets. Woot is now a subsidiary of Amazon, so they've got a lot of stuff that Amazon can't sell anymore, and they sell it super cheap.
Yeah.
And I put Android on it and give it to people. So you can go to WikiHow and find out how to do it. There's places all over the internet that will that will show you how to install pure Android on a Kindle Fire.
I did that to my wife's Nook in the early days.
Yep,
we got a Nook because that looked like it was going to be big through Barnes and Noble, and no, Fire one.
Right. So you can do that once it is out of warranty. My personal philosophy is do whatever you want with it.
Right.
So one of the things you can do is essentially wipe it and install real Android on it. Now it becomes a real Android tablet.
Okay.
And the closer you are to new, which is you're as close as you can get, it's just coming off warranty.
Right.
You can get a decent version of Android on it. You can get updates and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera for a while. So I would suggest that, you know, if you're comfortable with doing that, and again, you know, the possibility is you might brick it.
Right.
But as long as you're willing to risk that and you're comfortable with following the instructions, you should have no problem installing it on there without issue.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent thought. Because right now I have been using it to download newspapers, the local paper, etc. Because I have a Lenovo Chromebook tablet, and the Android, the app that's used for the local paper is just absolutely horrible. So I have to keep using the Amazon tablet in order to really read it. But they said that they're going to try to look at what the problem is. But right. I may be looking, like you said, let's go straight to using it as a pure Android device. Okay,
right.
Thank you.
Yep. And it, like I said, it is not a simple click update, but there are very clear instructions on places like WikiHow.
Okay, perfect.
And you should be able to do it.
All right, excellent. Thank you very much.
Yep, good luck.
Great holidays. Thank you.
You too. So, did you post that?
I was trying to find a simple one, but let me look at WikiHow too.
I don't know that there's a simple one available. It's not, you know, click here, but WikiHow does have a how to install Android on Kindle Fire with pictures, et cetera, so it's, you know, if you're careful, if you really read everything and pay real attention to what's going on, you should be able to do it.
Updated 1 month ago. That's probably a good one.
Yep.
Jack Lloyd. Wasn't that young Anakin Skywalker in episode one?
Yes, it was. It might be a different Jack Lloyd. It might not be.
Because he got out of acting after all the backlash.
He got out of acting, so it could be him. You should be able to find that without any real trouble there. So go for it. And like I said, you know, I'm a big believer in used equipment. I know you guys are not.
Oh, I do. Both, two of my computers are both refurbs.
I've always said if you know how to fix it yourself, it's fine. But right. I don't recommend used for the average person.
Or if it's cheap enough that it lasts you a year and you throw it away.
Yeah.
Well, that's where both my Dells. Matter of fact, my Dell, I just got the new hard drive for it because it lasted a year. I pulled the hard drive out of it, and it was some cheapy solid-state drive from China.
Right.
And I looked up the name, and it's like, couldn't even find any info on it.
Right.
So I just ordered the Western Digital, and I'm in the midst of putting that back. But again, like I've said before, it's so easy. I just installed the Windows on it, and I went to Google, logged into my Google account. All that came up, and all I had to do was put my ham radio programs back on it, and I'm back up and running. Didn't lose any data. Didn't lose any photos or any documents.
Yep, and that's of course that part of that is because you do good backups. But yeah, in general, I'm a big believer in buy that old used equipment or unsold equipment.
Gently used.
Gently used or simply unsold. I mean, Amazon makes a whole lot of Fire tablets every year.
Oh.
And a lot of them don't get sold and they end up on Woot.
Well, just like the tablet you got. You know, I mean, a lot of folks will get it and then the screen is a little too small. So they send it back wanting to upgrade.
That's always
this tablet is still very, new out of the box, but they can't sell it as new because it was sold to somebody else.
That's always the catch 22. Did they return it because they had problems or did they return it because they didn't like it?
Yeah.
And if you're willing to roll the dice.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't know if I mentioned this on the air. I was telling these guys this. Woot had a sale for scratch and dent sale. So
yeah,
it's laptops.
Yeah,
you mentioned on the air.
Yeah.
And what I ended up with was much more than I expected in pristine condition.
Now, where in Woot did you have that?
That was under clearance.
Okay, clearance.
And again, Woot is a different set of stuff every day. So, it's a one day, one deal kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not there weekly, folks. Every day, it's.
Yeah, their deal today is that Apple Watch I mentioned.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's an Amazon company, their return policy is probably pretty good.
Yes.
So that's the other thing.
And free shipping if you're an Amazon Prime person.
Yeah. So if it got returned because people had problems with it and you have problems with it and you want to be able to return it yourself.
That's exactly right. And like I said, I had that with one of the laptops I bought. It just.
Well, I love doing things for Amazon. Matter of fact, I was ordering some stuff for the wife and I went ahead and ordered it. It's okay. And all of a sudden, I got an email from Amazon and said, wait a minute. If you don't have this, if they haven't given us a notice that they've shipped this by a certain day, we're canceling the order. You haven't been charged. And we'll recommend a couple other sites. The day came and went. All of a sudden, I got the notice. Here's a couple other sites we recommend you check out. Went to that site, found one, ordered it, had it the next day.
Yep. That happened with a bunch of stocking stuffers I bought. I ordered them, and they said, it'll be 2, 3, maybe 4 days before you get it, which is fine because, it was a week and a half before Christmas, so not a problem.
Yeah.
The next morning, I get a notice that says it's on the truck.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay with
me. Winner, chicken dinner.
Exactly right.
I bought an airplane a couple of years ago. It was 50% off.
Wow.
Because it was returned.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So it comes, and so I take it out of the over shipping box, and the previous owner's RMA label is still on the box. What? So I start opening it, and one of the front gear door was broken. Everything else worked, but I was so mad at myself for not realizing it was a used product.
Right,
50% off, there's something going on.
Yeah.
Well, this
so there's probably some tiny print because the ad was long gone by the time I got it.
Right. Yeah. You do have to read carefully.
Yep.
I knew this was a scratch and dent sale, which meant clearly it was used.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got it, the box was sitting on the porch and the box was not in good shape. The box was absolutely not in good shape. Oh, man, I thought, I lost. Opened it up, everything was fine. The charger didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So I unplugged the charger bits from each other.
Ooh.
And plugged them back in. Works fine now.
Uh-huh. Maybe they just weren't seated.
Yeah, exactly right. So, you know, that was literally the only problem I had with it. So I got lucky, and I admit I got lucky. You know, like I said, I bought a bunch of tablets that went to people over the years, and I haven't had a problem yet. That's not true. I bricked one out of the dozen or so I've turned into Android tablets. I bricked one. And in general, you just have to be careful. You know, this was one of those times when my attention wandered. I missed the step or I don't know what I did, but I bricked it. But as long as you're careful, and they were inexpensive enough that I bricked one out of 10, I didn't mind losing it. And you know, you can give somebody a nice Android tablet or have one for yourself. There's no reason not to have it for yourself. So, but yeah, in general, as Steve has pointed out, if you know what you're doing, if your use of a refurbished or used product is not something you fear because you can fix it if it breaks, or you know Dave and he'll fix it for you, that's all right, you know. But if you don't have somebody who can do this stuff, then...
you're SOL.
Right. Ooh, our next caller is Mark from Justin, Texas?
Yes, that's correct.
How are things in Justin, Texas?
Nice and warm and sunny today.
All right, shut up. It's enough. No, actually, it's pretty safe and warm and sunny here, too.
That's good. I used to live in Rochester for many, many years before moving here. But I just happened to turn you on here. Real quick question. My Chromebook, I'll say, is outdated. It's more than 5 years old, and it no longer gets its updates.
Yep.
And it was just this year that it, you know, stopped getting the updates. A quick opinion, I'm probably not going to go buy one right away, but in the long run or whatever, you think it's wise then to upgrade so I could continue.
If you're happy with your Chromebook, get another one. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I am happy with it. It works beautiful.
Yeah. You know, my suggestion is wait for January.
Uh-huh.
That's when, you know, the post-holiday sales...
Should happen.
You know, you'll get a decent deal on them. Most Chromebooks these days have, I think it's 8 years.
Okay.
Yeah, they just updated their support mm-hmm. list a few months ago.
Is there a way to...
10 years, excuse me. Holy moly.
That's longer than what I had. So do I assume by buying a new one, I'm good then for 10 years?
Yep. That's the assumption.
Well, maybe. Mostly, yes. If you buy a two-year-old model that they're still selling,
well,
you get 8 years.
Right.
Yes, I could understand that. Well, all right, that was just looking for your opinion. I'm kind of thinking the same way. I'm in no hurry. Everything seems to be working. But maybe, like you said, you know, wait till after the holidays when...
And there have been several zero-day Chrome patches released this year that your machine may not have gotten.
Right.
So it's
I think I ran out back in June or July, so it's been 6 months since I've gotten anything.
Right.
All right, well, thank you. Quick opinion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I do miss Rochester. For many years I lived there.
Thank you. Your job is to get everybody in Justin, Texas to listen to this show.
I spread the word.
There you go.
I've been a fan of yours for a while. Have a good day. Bye.
You too, Mark. Thanks. Bye. He's just in Texas somewhere.
That's in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I listened to a podcast with a couple of guys from the Houston area. And one guy that used to live in Houston then moved to Buffalo, and I met him a couple of times. It's weird. It's like when people meet us. Well,
yeah.
Listening to him on the radio, well, you're not what I expected.
My daughter used to get so angry because when she was 6, 7, 8 years old, life is about her. But yeah. Everywhere we went, people knew me.
Yeah.
We were at Disney World.
Yeah.
And we're walking down the street, and some guy in the corner says, "Hey, you're Nick Francesco." I thought my daughter's head was going to explode.
Yeah.
Because this was, it was Disney World. It was all about her.
Yeah. We were in Toronto at a science fiction convention.
Toronto,
yeah, waiting for an elevator. And someone, "Hey, you're Steve Ray."
Yeah.
Cool.
That's very cool. Nothing wrong with that. Thank you.
Must have had a fairly large Rochester contingent going up to that convention.
Exactly. All right, our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. So I've got an old HP printer. It's an 882C model, one of the first ones that they're coming out with. And I was looking online for a replacement color cartridge. From what I can see, HP no longer makes a HP-branded color cartridge for that model anymore. They still make the black and white cartridge, which is a 45, but the color one is 23, HP 23 cartridge, and the only ones available now are third-party replacements, as far as I can see.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
They must be using the one cartridge in a different printer, because it'd be odd to have a black cartridge and not the color cartridge. Right.
That's what I was confused, because I did a search on the HP website, and they don't offer any cartridges any color cartridges for that printer anymore.
Yeah, it looks like you're going to have to go with third party if you're going to keep that printer.
Right. No problem with that, but although the quality is not quite the same as the HP was.
Right. Well, it depends on what cartridges you get. Yes.
And yeah, there again, if you buy the ones that are too cheap, that you're not going to get as good a result.
It's not just the color, but the ink tends to dry out very quickly.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the problem with color printers to begin with. If you don't use them really, really often, they start to dry out. And some companies have ink that is formulated to not dry out as fast. And those are generally the more expensive ones and less expensive ones don't.
In fact, I don't use a printer very much. I do as little printing with it as possible because it is relatively expensive to use the ink.
Yeah. Right. I eventually got my wife, who loves to print out snapshots. I got a little 4x6 Dysub printer from Kodak for like $100.
Yep.
And doesn't dry out because the three picture mates I bought her all dried out the ink. And so since it's a dye sublimation ribbon, it doesn't dry out, and she can print 4x6 prints, and I find that she doesn't print that much that she thought she was going to print. She hasn't got around to it yet.
Right.
Yep. But
my next printer is going to be a color laser.
Yeah.
I'm kind of done with I'm entirely done with inkjet printers, and I think I'm kind of done with black and white printers.
Yeah, but the color laser still is not what you'd call photographic quality.
No, it is not. No, if you're printing out photos, then the sub-dye kind of printer that Steve got is what you want. Absolutely.
Or the four-digit color laser printers.
Well, the $1,000.
$1,000 or more ones. We used to sell this beautiful Xerox Phaser color laser printer. It was only $8,000, but that's what all the ad agencies in town were using for their color proofs.
Right.
And so that was on my list of when I hit the lottery.
Mm. Yeah.
How are the Epson, what do they call them, Eco printers?
Well, so Epson is among the best in color reproduction, I have found. And their Eco printers are kind of neat. One of the things that the Epson has is 6 color tanks, so you get better color mixing. And the Eco tanks are physically bigger tanks, and they can be refilled easier. So the cost per print is significantly lower than a cartridge you buy for $20, which is like $4,000 a gallon.
Right.
And so the Eco tanks, especially if you're doing photographs, you want the 6 color model. But yeah, they're a pretty nice way to do it. But again, you got to print a lot so they don't dry out as fast.
Right.
Right.
All right, we got to go, Tom.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Have a good time. Bye.
All right, that music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I really want to thank everybody who calls in. Good questions this week. Thank you all very much. Keep up the quality work. And you can do that by waiting just a week, and we will be back next week with a whole nother two-hour session of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's the Rumball edition of Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours with Rumballs.